Beyond the headlines, this is World Insight.
Hello and welcome to World Insight with me, Tian Wei. The third China Media Group Forum convened this month, themed A Force for Good, a Shared Responsibility in AI. The forum will be joined by leaders of international organizations, leading global media outlets, scholars and experts. The swift technology development is transforming the media industry in forms, orientation and more. The trend has brought innovation, but also challenges such as the spread of misinformation and widening information gap. So how can we pull the wisdom of all parties to make the best of the situation? CGTN presents the sub-forum themed AI-driven age of new media, where panelists elaborate on how media adapt to the trend of technology advances and narrow the gap of information. Before we delve into the panel discussion, let's listen to comments on AI development and its impact on humanity from some key figures in the political, academic, and business sectors.
A technological explosion happening with the AI technology, which is now extending its capability to language modeling, and that gives us a complete new opportunity.
There is no prosperous company in a non-prosperous country, and there is not one prosperous country without prosperous companies. And together we bring technology.
I was very interested by the speech of President Xi Jinping in the Belt and Road Forum. And he said that China and BRICS and so on want to have 8 priorities, such as artificial intelligence, for ecological transition and so on. 8 priorities. But for each priority, he said we have to build a world regulation. And I think that for our cooperation, the priority right now is to work together for the regulation. Because artificial intelligence, it's a very fantastic progress.
When President Xi met with President Biden to reaching an agreement kind of on how AI is used in military application, right after that, we saw a path to San Francisco. You know, I want a cooperative relationship that helps the peoples of both countries. And we're not there, but we're at least off of the bottom where we were.
The AI community in China and the United States is about as intertwined as it possibly could be. There are areas that's going to require collaboration at the multilateral level, and we've seen some of that. The UN just issued a recent resolution. Also at the bilateral level, we have the U.S. and China have a working group on AI.
The problem we face of low productivity and weak growth needs a solution, and artificial intelligence can be a big part of this solution. It can increase productivity tremendously.
I think AI will be a fantastic complement with a strong 5G network or strong connected society. Putting AI on top will give immense possibilities for creating much more optimized flows, much more optimized work positions.
It's a great time in terms of technology. It's artificial intelligence, but the way we do things will completely be transformed in the next 3 years. So a huge opportunity, but a significant transformation.
For more, joining us in California, Amma Avadala, who is the founder and CEO of Vectera. That's a generative AI company. In Cambodia, Vanarita Chang, who is the chairman of Angkor Social Innovation Park. In Beijing, Bruce Niku, chairman at FMT, and also PhD candidate from the School of International Development with UIBE. In Beijing also, Edgar Perez, CEO of Mr. EdgarPerez.com. Last but not least, Andy Mock, research fellow at the Center for China and Globalization. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for joining us. There has been enormous amount of discussions and debates about the role of artificial intelligence and its impact on the media and journalism. Now, there's no definition eventually as to what AI is doing and how the technologies would evolve. And therefore, let me go to our technology experts first about where we are technology-wise and what it could mean for the media landscape. Go to you, Mr. Perez.
Impact of AI is going to be generating across all companies. When you think about media, of course, you think about the creation of content. And when you think about that, you need to consider that the users at the end of the day will enjoy content that is going to be customized to them. You might have seen a few weeks ago the release of Sora. And that created such an impact in Hollywood because potentially it's going to transform the movie industry. Yet, in the same way that we are impacted by the quality of the images, that's just the beginning. Eventually, there are going to be tools that are going to be even more precise than that. And that's going to reach eventually the hands of the users who will be able to create, let's say, particular outcomes of a movie that we all enjoy.
The fact that we have AI systems that can create a newscast, a news show like this show we're having right now, with a number of AI characters debating a key topic, is going to be missing a lot of the nuance of how the emotional aspect, a lot of the insights, the intuition, the passion that we might have. And so that I don't think it's going to be a replacement for, but it's going to help us create these shows with much smaller budgets. I think this is really what the bottom line is. So if you go, for example, at Sora, which is the example that Edgar mentioned, Sora will allow folks to create movies very, very easily. So a very famous Netflix show that we have in the US right now is the Three Body Problem show, which is based on a very famous novel from China. They say that show, they didn't do it with AI, but that show, it cost them $20 million per episode. For every single episode, they had to pay $20 million. I imagine by the end of this year or next year, you'll be able to make a show like that and create every single episode for a fraction of a fraction of the cost.
All right. Bruce, you've been investing in the AI sector. I'm sure you know that what we are seeing, whether it's Sora or ChatGPT, is only a top of the iceberg. There are enormous amount of potential over there about artificial intelligence technology-wise. Tell me, what are you looking at specifically and why those technologies could furthermore transform the media landscape?
If you look back over the last 10 years to get a sense of the trajectory that we are on right now and the incredible momentum that I think everybody can now see in the generative AI revolution, what we have done is just in the last 10 years for AI, we have become very, very good at classifying information. So now AI models, they can understand this information, they can sort it out, label it, organize it, and like the classification is really, really critical to enabling this next wave, because now we can read the content of images, we can understand the text pretty well, we can classify audio, we can transcribe it, and the machine now, they have pretty good sense of the conceptual representation of those ideas. And that's what we are looking at that when we are investing. So the next phase is that what we're seeing right now with generative AI revolution, AGI, is that now the AI can produce new images, they can produce new videos, new audios, and new language models. And in the last 3 years since the launch of ChatGPT-3, I think, and other AI models, it's pretty much incredible to see how plausible and accurate and very finessed to these new language models are in the next 5 years.
Andy, your thoughts on this, given there are different development stages among various economies. You know, when we talk about the evolution of technologies, how will these technology be used in the media, especially in the media industry, and have an impact on different kinds of economies? Some have access to it, some don't, and some are used to the fact that contents are generated by AI, and the interesting relationship evolving between human beings and AI. Others may not necessarily be. They are just simply being, quote unquote, the audience, the recipient of all these. Tell me more about your thoughts on that.
Sure, Wei. So I think when we talk about the impact of artificial intelligence on media, it's important first to distinguish between journalism and media. So these two are, of course, intimately connected, but they're actually quite separate. So journalism, of course, is the collection, the assessment, the creation, and the presenting of news and information to educate and inform the public. And here, I think this is very, very exciting. We heard that AI is like electricity. I like to think of it like the printing press. Now, whether we think this was invented by Gutenberg or in the Song Dynasty, I think doesn't really matter. But this was transformational in terms of not only the ability to democratize or make much more available information, but it had enormous and unexpected political ramifications, because we can point directly to the printing press in Europe leading to the Protestant Reformation and many other things that arose from that.
Mm. Having said that, though, it's very important that you are distinguishing journalism vis-a-vis media industry. Now, these two are certainly very different. Let's concentrate on the content first. First of all, we have seen tremendous amount of debates about AI governance regarding media and journalism. One is the hallucination, which I think, Amir, you have been working on intensely. The other is the deep fake. That has been a big concern. Meanwhile, the imitations of human beings, whether it's in voice or in visual form, which individuals did not do, and yet through AI production could present it as if he or she did it, would become such a big topic, as we are already in the middle of an election year, half of the world's population in the elections. So tell me more about that. How, at this point even, the governance vis-a-vis encouraging development of technologies, how could they go hand in hand? Your input.
Yes, so we need to have a balance between developing the technologies to be used for good versus to be used for harm, right? So deepfakes is a harm, potentially. If you don't have the permission of the person, if I take your photo away and make a character that looks just like you and start making money off of that, that clearly is harm. That's not a good thing. And the technology exists today for me to very easily do that. So what would prevent me from doing that is there's regulations by the government that says if you make a copy of somebody's image or voice without their permission, then that's a crime. In the same way that today, if I go grab a color printer and try to print some money, I'll go to prison because I'm using the color printer to print money, which is a crime. So we need some regulations to curb the bad uses from taking place. That said, deepfakes can also be used for good. So if I'm making a movie with some fictional characters like Avatar or World of Warcraft or whatever, then it's good to actually have deepfakes for these characters inside of that movie. And everybody knows they're fakes anyway, sci-fi, so that's okay. So we need to have clear guidelines around that. And that's what's going to balance not just individuals, but will balance companies not leveraging the AI in ways that can be damaging to a society. Mm.
So what is good? And what is bad? And what about the different degrees in between? How will technologies, when being developed and used in media and journalism, be able to articulate these important concepts? Now, go to you, Vanarit.
Thanks. I think, as a previous commentator mentioned, the politicization and securitization of technology become more complex and very hard for us to reach consensus, even at the regional level, on the AI governance or governance of emerging technologies. And now we are living in a very fragmented world, and geopolitics of technology become more complex and unpredictable and dangerous. So it's, you know, the evolution of AI technologies are happening in the context of the decline of global governance and multilateralism and rule-based international order. So this is, it's going to be a very messy revolution, so to speak. So I think when it comes to right and wrong, bad or good, that is very subjective.
I guess this is also an interesting part that I want to emphasize on, which is what are the roles, you know, of different stakeholders? We rely on governments, you know, even to sort out the current geopolitics, which they play the part, by the way. We rely on the industry during the social media time, for example, among some of the platform countries, platform companies, and they fail to deliver. And that is so clear if you look at the results today. Even though they claim they are trying, and we hope they have been really trying, by the way. And now there's also the role of the public. But how much the public has the literacy about the latest technologies and how they can be used, and therefore be able to play a role as a stakeholder and manage so that all the development will be for the quote-unquote good of the public? That is a tremendous question facing us today. Are we repeating the earlier mistakes by only tapping into the stakeholders that are now have power in hand, rather than spreading the power of knowledge through the public? Let me go to Bruce, for that answer.
For the very first time in the history, human beings have created an intelligence which could be even more intelligent than them, right? So if this autonomy is built into these models, and that's a very big if, it could be actually governed, it could be common sense safeguarding, it could be controlled. But if we have that, then we are dealing with some of the models that very soon in the next decade or even sooner, they can create some of these applications that they can create a lot of deep and false information. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be very difficult, you know, for a lot of humans, because, you know, these systems might be even more intelligent than us. It's going to be very difficult for us to recognize them. Mm-hmm. So what we're talking here is just, you know, as you mentioned, we need a lot of stakeholders to step in and try to, based on some common safeguard rules and guidelines, try to, with authority, to control this, to contain them. Recently, EU, they have passed the EU AI Act. I think that's a good step. A lot of these stakeholders, like companies, they are trying to self-govern, self-contain themselves. That's a good step. But none of these are enough. We have to educate public as much as we can. That's partly on government actors and also the companies. And we also to reinforce, you know, some of the institutions that they can protect, you know, the public. Just we have a lot of organization institutions that they are protecting public rights when it comes to a lot of consumer products, a lot of technologies, right? So we need to create those and empower them. Like, you know, there are different, you know, infrastructure for them.
Vanarit, tell me your thoughts about that.
Yes, the speed of learning and innovation between the public sector and private sector is far apart. I think the public sector tried to catch up with the evolution of industry and technology. And with the lack of understanding and the implication of emerging technology, including AI, so the government does not have a strategic yet allocation of resources in order to prepare themselves to regulate or to govern or to maximize the benefits stemming from emerging technology. So that is perhaps the common issue that the developing country facing is the lack of understanding and knowledge of this industry and how the public sector can respond, especially the regulators, because most of regulators, of course, they are lawyers, but do the lawyer understand the industry so that they can regulate it so that the society benefits? So look at the public, the social sector, you mentioned the public, the civil society and so on, they are also far left behind in this digital technology development. And they need the government to support them, because we can't rely on the private sector to invest in the digital literacy in the education.
Yeah.
So the role here is the government need to invest more resources to educate the public about the implication, about how they can use technology in a good way, so to speak. Yeah.
And also the North-South divide, quote unquote, if I could simplify things like that, even the divide within a society, whether it is so-called global North or global South, we see this wealth divide, the knowledge divide that are ever, the gap is getting ever bigger as we speak. So Andy, on that, do you see there are enough platforms and discussions, sophisticated ones, of course, going on about it?
Well, I think this is certainly an issue that's top of mind around the world way, you know, at the United Nations. China certainly, I think, has a foot in both camps, because as a technology leader in artificial intelligence, as well as the hardware that allows access, so smartphones, laptops, et cetera, China is a leader in these areas. It also, I think, is very sympathetic and in many ways still a part of the global South. So I think clearly, yes. I want to briefly just address this earlier point about these concerns about deepfakes. I would just maybe pose this question that will we be worried about this 10 years from now? I would say probably not, and here's why. These concerns, and not to minimize them, we've seen this movie before, and not only once, but many times. So if we go back even to Socrates, he worried about, with the advent of writing, which I guess was the ChatGPT or the printing press of its day, that this would lead to all sorts of problems where you could fake someone's message in writing and all sorts of bad things would happen. Of course, bad things did happen, but at the same time, I think humans, civilizations, societies are incredibly resilient and adaptive. So while today, certainly, I think government, NGOs, media should be taking steps to educate the public, but at the same time, I think this is a self-correcting problem. And the other point I wanted to make about this too is that does the public really need to be that well informed about artificial intelligence? I think that most people in the public don't care. They just want, for example, they don't really need to know how electricity works. They just need to know that when they flip the light switch, the light comes on. You know, some very famous technologists have said, good technology is just like magic. And the people that lead, of course, need to be ethical. They need to keep the public interest in mind. But I think that this is different from needing to educate the public about how a lot of these things work. And what this means then, I think, for the global South is, again, I'm very optimistic about this, is that we look at what smartphones have done for the global South. Inexpensive smartphones have allowed people to get online, to transact business, both domestically as well as internationally. And I see AI as a similar leveling technology that will actually bring far greater prosperity and opportunities to many people that have not reached the levels of the Western world or the developed world or the global North,
right.
You know, whatever we would call that.
Having said that, though, let me go to another very important question. That is, how much do we know about these technologies of artificial intelligence? You know, in terms of whether it will replace human being or become a tool of human being in terms of media and journalism. Another thing related to this is what is the role of media and journalism? You could see media companies around the world are very nervous about this, while at the same time excited about this artificial intelligence, because they need to take advantage of these technologies for better operations, better benefits, better revenues, if you talk about the media companies. Well, at the same time, they're nervous because they are the public's way of understanding how this technology works, and they should provide more information and analysis in that. So you see both hyping of AI and also the urges for governance of AI within one media organization anywhere in the world. So how do you see this interesting interactions among the functions of a media organization and also among the functions of a society?
I think, look at the media industry is getting more decentralized, and AI plays a significant role in this process of decentralization of media. I think that the future trend, I shared a view with some previous commentators that perhaps AI will replace humans when it comes to content productions. But the key question is the power, the agency of users. So because at the end of the day, in the market economy, the users remain the most important also actor in this marketplace. So the question of a user, so how we can empower them, empower the users and increase their agency in this media industry. But when it comes to the supply side of it, I think it will be replaced by AI.
I agree with the Venner's statements. That's exactly what's going to take place. Like, media is going to survive. Media is essential. It's going to survive. But the way that we do media is going to evolve, right? Yeah. you will be a lot more effective in doing it, a lot more cheaper at producing media. So more people will be able to produce very, very good media in the same sense that we have podcasters now being able to compete with large corporations, and that could never have happened in the past.
Gentlemen, what a pleasure talking to all of you. Certainly a great discussion. I hope a discussion like this will continue and in more in-depth way in the future. Thank you so much. And that's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei on behalf of the team. Thank you so much for being with us. Bye for now.